Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, Mr. Ross Clifford, this is like old times.
It is indeed, Sherry.
It's nice to have you here, folks. Mr. Ross Clifford is the principal of Morling College, a Sydney-based theological college that trains pastors and missionaries. He's an author, a speaker, a broadcaster, a former lawyer, and I would actually say, you can just close your ears, Ross, I would actually say he's probably one of the best communicators of the Christian story, of the Christian message that we actually have in this nation. And that's the reason why I had him on in a radio program that I was doing over in Perth for many years. And so it's been a long time since we've done this. So it's actually good
to catch up.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. So your books, we need to mention those, Sacred Quest, Riding the Roller Coaster, Jesus and the Gods of the New Age, and many others. But the one that I'm particularly interested in us talking about really is Leading Lawyers Look at the Resurrection. Being Easter Sunday, this is the opportunity for us to explore this, because while historically Christians have always believed Jesus Christ actually rose physically from the grave, right from the beginning, there's always been questions.
Oh, and understandably, because it's a big claim, isn't it? Someone defeating death. And it's interesting that the disciples themselves, you know, they had doubts. Jesus appeared before them. And, the disciple Thomas, I mean, he had to touch Jesus to believe. So it's just not in today's age. From the very beginning, people really had to get their head around this, and it took some time for them to do it. In fact, Jesus, after he's resurrected, keeps on appearing to the disciples, keeps on giving them more convincing proofs. So it just really settles into their spirit that this guy has really done this thing.
Mm. From the research that I've done, I guess you could group the criticisms of the idea into three main kind of broad areas. One is the natural explanations. There might be some natural explanations as to why this story arose that Jesus rose from the dead. The other is, the mythical, maybe this was a legend that kind of started to grow up over history. The other one is the spiritual explanations that Jesus maybe didn't rise physically, actually rose spiritually. He had some sort of resurrection. So let's run through each one of those. The natural first, there's been a number of theories proposed about what happened on that Easter Sunday that led to people thinking that maybe Jesus had risen from the dead, but he really, really didn't. One is called the swoon theory, that Jesus just basically passed out. He came back to life and walked out.
Yeah, look, I think Mel Gibson's film, really The Passion, really kills that theory, because most people get it now that Romans didn't make mistakes with respect to crucifixion. It wasn't a case of you turning up and faking it or swooning it or pretending you're dead. I mean, you are on a cross. And in Jesus' case, Sheridan, remember, you know, he is whipped to the point of death. He's carrying a cross which he couldn't take the weight of it. Mm. He had this crown of thorns, you know, punched into his head. He's knocked around the face. And on the cross, you suffocate. And that's why they break your legs, so you can't keep pushing yourself up. They come to Jesus. He's already dead. There's no need for the Romans to break his legs. So just to make sure, they put a spear into his side. Now, of course, Barbara Thiering, who wrote Jesus the Man, she's the Australian scholar who said, look, he swooned. What Barbara says is that he's in the tomb. He's there with the two thieves who died next to him on the cross there. One of them apparently has got a bit of a medical background. Somehow one of the Marys gets in there and she's got a bit of medical background. And they take all the aloes and myrrh and they pour that all over him and he revives. Now, I heard her saying that on a secular radio station and a doctor rang up and said, well, actually, Barbara, if you put aloes and myrrh upon a person in that state, it would actually kill them rather than revive them.
Oh, dear.
But, you know, he's been through all of that. He's had the spear wound and somehow he walks out of that tomb, you know, rolling away a massive stone with two guys on either side with broken legs. Somehow they all get out of the tomb and he says,
"That's a good
resurrection."
Point. They've all got broken legs. Good point.
Except for Jesus, of course. He's just got spear wound.
That's right.
And the face and the whipping to the point of death. And you're talking in a very short period of time. That guy walking out with none of the medications we know and convincing everybody of a resurrection. Now, there's an old skeptic by the name of Strauss, who's not a Christian by any means, and he said the swoon theory is a bigger miracle than the resurrection itself, that someone could actually fake death upon a cross, fake it in front of the Romans, resuscitate themselves, and somehow get out there. Mm. I think the difficulty that many people have is they can't start with God. And if you begin with a world where there is a God and the potential of a God, then the resurrection is no great difficulty. But if you begin with a world where there can be no God, then you're always going to try to look for a natural explanation for how this could have happened.
Another one that's kind of related to that a little bit, and you see it in a couple of different variations, is the conspiracy theory. Jesus' body was actually stolen from the grave. The Islamic position is almost maybe similar to this, that maybe Jesus' body was actually swapped. It wasn't actually Jesus who died on the cross. They actually don't believe that. He actually was taken up to heaven in their theology.
Look, one of the great problems with all of this is with those theories is the detail that we get in the Gospels about how the burial took place. For example, a man is named Joseph of Arimathea, and he's named in your Gospels. Now, Joseph is a member of the Sanhedrin. He's actually responsible for the burial of Jesus. Now, so he's a member of that Jewish council. They're not in favour of Jesus. They've put him up to be executed. Mm. And Arimathea was a tiny little dusty town. So in today's language, it's like saying Ross Clifford of Macquarie Park, you know, buried Jesus. I mean, Joseph of Arimathea, you could check him out. He was a leading member of the Jewish council. His location, his post office box is given. Anybody of that time could have got in contact with Joseph and said, hey, what happened, mate? Did they actually steal his body? Was it sold off somewhere else? And you're a member of the Jewish Sanhedrin, so you don't have to keep the story alive. No, nothing happens because it's true. He died. Mm. You don't give that sort of detail so you can actually check out if there is an alternative theory with people who are present. You don't give that detail if you're trying to hide anything. Yes. You just don't do it. I'm a former lawyer. You don't give those details of facts. You don't give anyone anywhere to go or anybody to ring or an alternative witness. Yeah. And the fact that history has never been able to answer the empty tomb or actually indicate anybody could give any substance to those rumours. No, look, he's dead. He's dead upon the cross.
I guess the same actually argument would hold to the idea that Mary went to the wrong tomb. That's another theory that's put forward as well. Again, if that's the case, you can actually ring up, quote unquote, ring up Joseph of Arimathea and say, well, you know.
Well, yeah, and the difficulty with that is too, is you look at all the Gospels, Mary, the women are the only ones who saw Jesus die, buried, resurrected. The guys saw, his disciples saw him die and resurrected. Only the women saw where he was buried with Joseph. Now, that's extraordinary because women couldn't give evidence in a court of law in those days.
Yes.
So the unbroken chain of evidence of death, burial, and resurrection is with the women alone. And as a Jewish historian Lapid said, that's a ring of truth. If you're trying to create falsehood, you wouldn't have the women as the ones who give the evidence of where he's buried.
Wouldn't be credible. If you're going to make a story up, you'd have men actually seeing it because their actual testimony is valid.
So as a Jewish historian, you're saying, hey, this has got a ring of truth to it.
Yeah.
So Mary actually knew where the grave site was. She was there. So, you know, the fact that she went to the wrong tomb, there's just no substance to it. It just didn't happen.
Open house right across the nation. We have Ross Clifford with us. We're talking about the resurrection of Jesus and whether it actually can be understood as a physical, bodily resurrection or whether some of these other explanations might actually have some sort of credibility to them. Ross is not just a theologian and a principal of a theological college. He's also a former lawyer too. He comes with that kind of mindset. One of the critics that I have read in the past has said he actually doesn't give any credence to any of those things we've just talked about because they actually give some degree of credibility to the New Testament story itself. He would say, look, the whole thing, right from the beginning, is actually a myth and a legend. The idea goes like this. The Gospels were actually written, the Gospel of Mark is the earliest Gospel written, probably 40 years after Jesus actually lived and died and possibly rose from the dead. The other Gospels are actually even later. The idea is that what was maybe a spiritual resurrection or maybe some sort of nice thought evolved into this teaching. And then it was written back into the Gospels.
Yeah, look, there's real difficulty with that as well, because most of us can remember back 40 years, believe it or not, if you've lived that long. You can remember back to your marriage day. I mean, you can remember back to actually a game of football that took place or a cricket match or a substantial event in your life. And Ken Hanley, the fine Supreme Court Justice, points out that when they did the Voyager case, they had people having to recall what took place 40 years ago. And they did it with minute detail. And courts could make decisions on the basis of the testimony then. So there really is no difficulty with people going back and recalling what took place 40, 50, 30 years ago.
There's almost an element of sinister motives in this kind of critic's mind, though. He's saying it's not just simply they couldn't recall the details. No, no, they've actually written this, they've rewritten the story.
Yeah, once again, I think people want that to be the case because they just can't get their head around there being a god. But again, you see, you know, Sharon, why would people die for something that they knew was a myth or just purely mythology? You know, they have written something that they actually believe is true. And they've written and said, we are witnesses to this fact. And we actually know from history in those days that people used to go around, you know, Greek, Roman history, and they'd try to interview people who saw events or close to events, and they would record that. And so what you've got in Luke's gospel and in the other gospels is very consistent with that. You know, Luke says, I've gone up to these people, I've addressed them, I've asked what they have seen and witnessed, and I have recorded that event. And all the way through the New Testament, you hear them saying, we were witnesses of this event. They say, we were witnesses. So what you're implying is, or they are implying, is if it's myth, that somehow these people are being involved in some sort of falsehood or some sort of lie. But look at the teaching of Jesus. I mean, people who don't believe in his resurrection will tell you he's the finest teacher who ever lived. He taught values of integrity and honesty and virtue. Can you imagine his followers at the point of death actually creating falsehood for some reason, who knows, which is totally contrary to how their master lived and puts their own life at risk.
One author that I read actually suggested that it was probably Peter's doing. Peter was feeling so guilty that he was the one who had denied Jesus and hadn't stood up for him, and then Jesus gets killed, that in the end, to make everybody feel better, the idea was, oh no, he's come back to life.
You look, one of the interesting answers to all of that is James. The book of James is extraordinary. It's in our Bibles. And there's no question that the writer is James, the brother of Jesus. Now, the fascinating thing is that if you read John's gospel, because the gospels are incredibly open, they tell it warts and all, James and the brothers had doubts. They weren't really sure who this Jesus was. And what turns James around? There's clearly only one thing that turns him around. His brother, who was dead, appeared alive to him. And James himself, in his book in the New Testament, calls Jesus one with God, gives him the same status with God. Now, a Jew wouldn't do that. He becomes the leader of the early church. And he also refers to Jesus as the glorious, exalted Lord. Now, what's transformed this doubting, Jewish, skeptical brother into a believer to give his life for this cause and to run the church and actually say this brother of mine is one with God, equal with God? What's turned around? Some myth? Some fairy tale? Oh no. He ran into the risen Christ. The myth doesn't add up. By the way, Tolkien and Lewis would say that doesn't mean that the story of resurrection is not internal within all of us. That's why we find it in so many other religions. That doesn't mean that we don't look for the hope of resurrection. But what Tolkien and Lewis said, the great creators of myth, you know, Lord of the Rings and the Narnia tales, is that in the resurrection of Jesus, that legend, that desire for resurrection actually became a historical reality. Legend and history fused.
Theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast of our chat with Ross Clifford from Malling College, author of numerous books, including Leading Lawyers Look at the Resurrection. Ross was a lawyer before he was a pastor and now a theologian. We're talking about the possible natural explanations for the resurrection of Jesus, the possible mythical explanations we've just actually talked about there, the third group of criticisms, I guess, about the whole idea of Jesus rising bodily from the grave would be what you might call the spiritual explanation. Jesus did rise again, but he didn't rise physically. He rose spiritually. He rose in their hearts. And now some people would point to some of the references in the New Testament about how Jesus appeared. You've got the two people in the book of Luke who are walking along the road to Emmaus. Jesus appears alongside them. They don't recognize who he is. You've got an appearance where Jesus meets the disciples in a room. The door is actually locked. He seems to have drifted through the wall. There's something different about Jesus' body. Where would you go with that?
Look, I believe it is a literal physical resurrection, and I believe the early church knew nothing else but that. And if the Apostle Paul, for example, thought it was some sort of spiritual resurrection, then he would have left the faith. He himself says in 1 Corinthians 15, if Jesus has not been raised, then I'm out of here and your faith is futile. Mm. But there's no doubt that the resurrection body is a transformed and it's a changed body. I mean, it's not exactly the same as the limitations that we have with our body now. So I think we've, you know, that's for sure. But the fact is the tomb is open. He has been raised. The body has been transformed. I just think people are trying to have their cake and eat it as well. They're trying to have a tomb that's still got bones in it, but a Jesus that has risen. And of course, that really means that he hasn't actually risen in history, but he's actually risen in your life and mine. And so it's turned the fact of the resurrection away from something that occurred in history to something that happens in people's lives. Now, the resurrected Christ comes into our lives, but only because it's happened in history. 1 Corinthians 15, for example, we read what Paul says, and he makes it very clear that he was buried, that he was raised, that he died according to the Bible, according to the Old Testament, according to the Scriptures, and that he appeared to me. Paul saying he appeared to me as he appeared to James, that we've been chatting about, the brother of Jesus, as he appeared to Peter, as he appeared to the 500, as he appeared to the disciples. And he's saying he appeared, you know, and he's using the same word for the appearances that you see in the rest of the New Testament. So I don't think any of them have any different form of appearance. It's always risen Christ, but he's not limited to the body as we now know.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk about that particular passage, 1 Corinthians chapter 15, because some critics would actually say, no, Paul is actually saying this is a spiritual thing, not a physical thing, because nothing is mentioned of an empty tomb. It actually says, Christ died for our sins, according to the Scriptures. He was buried, that he was raised on the third day, according to the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Peter, then to the 12, then to 500, etc., etc. They say, there's no mention of an empty tomb, that, you know, he just arose. Then they go on to say that the Greek word for raised is actually the Greek word for kind of awaken rather than the Greek word for resurrection. And then he appeared to people, you know, is appeared rather than he was resurrected, you know, i.e., you know, a spirit could appear or spiritually he could appear in their hearts.
Yeah, look, they do say that. But I think if you go and look at those that passage in itself, you'll see that Paul has four that's. He talks about that he died, that he was buried, that he was raised, and that he appeared. And I really think that if you want to get from buried to raised and then appeared without a resurrection, you've got the onus to do that. I mean, I think that's just a common sense understanding of what the guy's saying. I know what they say with respect to the Greek, but, you know, as C.S. Lewis says, you've got to be really cautious with language. I mean, you and I write books, and we use different words at different times to describe different experiences.
Yeah, thesaurus. I mean, you can actually use a variety of different words for the same kind of thing.
But if you go back to his sermon, I think it's in Acts 13, you've got him doing the same thing, that he says that, you know, according to prophecy, this guy died, and he was buried, and then he was raised, and he appeared. And, you know, that's just totally consistent with the New Testament message. Paul doesn't see his brief to give you the details of those first resurrection appearances because he wasn't there. The gospel writers who were witnesses to that, they give you those stories of those first resurrection appearances. Paul gives you these stories of the resurrection appearances that he himself encountered with Christ. And read the passage. I mean, Paul says, if this did not happen, then this is all futile. And to think that Paul would be basing that on some inner experience as against some truthful enactment in history that changed the world is just extraordinary.
And what about when Paul says flesh and blood can't inherit the kingdom of heaven? Mm. Some would say, well, that's proof. There you go. Jesus couldn't have actually raised from dead physically. Flesh and blood can't inherit it.
Yeah, I think we read on, and Paul's certainly saying that in the sense that unless we are transformed by the Spirit of God, we cannot inherit the kingdom of heaven, as Paul does
fallen
elsewhere.
Fallen flesh, fallen blood.
Yeah, it's got to be transformed by the Spirit of God. It's, you know, we can't just walk our way into heaven. There's going to be a resurrection of our souls. It has to be a transformation of us, and the transformation of our bodies need to be by the Spirit of God, which no one, I hope, would dispute. But to say that means that that tomb could still be full. I mean, Christianity would have died in the first couple of weeks if someone actually produced the body. You know, it's not hard to show that that's not how the early church saw it. They took Paul on board. He was a persecutor of the church. He became a leader of the church. Those original disciples took him on board and made him one of the apostles' disciples with him. Do you think they would have done that if he had a different message? that it's only got to be spiritual. It didn't have to be an empty tomb. Mm. These guys saw a risen Christ. The tomb was empty. You know, the extraordinary thing is we can't even tell you where the tomb is. We have great debates now which tomb is the actual tomb. Why? Because nobody went there. There's no record of it. There was no need to record where the tomb was because nobody believed anything was in it. So you imagine in those early first years, Christianity is growing. Joseph Arimathea is about. All they had to do was produce that body. Would have it survived? It would have died. Mm. The answer that's a spiritual resurrection would have done no convincing to anybody.
Ross, you weren't always a believer. What does the resurrection mean for you, you know, and how did it change your life?
Yeah, look, I was a doubter. I was a doubter, really, when I was studying the Bible, to tell you the truth. And I just went through incredible periods of doubt, mainly because reading a lot of these skeptical books, which I was doing it for the purpose of training for ministry. Mm. And then I came across a book that made me look again afresh at what the Bible's really saying and what the evidence is for the resurrection. I became a believer.
What was the book?
It was John Wright Montgomery, and it was one of his books, and the name of the book has just gone from me. The Law Above the Law. Actually, I was thinking of going back into law. I was actually thinking leaving the training of ministry, going back in the law. I was in my first year. I told the principal of the college I've been offered another job back in law. I was thinking of going. I picked up this book, sale of secondhand books at the college for 20 cents. I went back and read it. I read the basic case for the resurrection, simply explained, but properly explained. I went back and read the Gospels, and I turned up again. I just transformed again back into a believer of Christ.
Just like the Apostle Peter picking up your fishing rod and heading back to your old job.
But I can understand doubt. But I think the average Australian also understands that if you look at this thing honestly and with integrity, and you don't come with a view that, there's no God out there, therefore dead men can't rise. If you look with some sort of integrity, the evidence is overwhelming that tomb's empty. Mm. And how else do you explain it? And the resurrection is the key, because if Jesus is resurrected, it means there is hope. There's eternal hope. It also means that the claim that my sins are forgiven is true, as Paul says. Is if he's resurrected, it means that what took place on the cross has been completed. And I think also, Sheridan, the resurrection is very important because it shows that God's concerned about the whole me. The whole of Jesus was raised up, not just his spirit. The whole of his body was raised up and transformed.
He cares about my body, my physical being.
Yeah, the whole of me is going to be raised up and go into eternity. Mm. Christianity is unique. It's about resurrection. It's not about reincarnation, survival of the spirit. It's about the survival of the whole of me. If God cares for the whole of me in the future, he cares for the whole of me now, mind, body, spirit. It's the most empowering message. Don't let that go. Don't let that resurrection message go.
Ross, it's been good.
It's been a pleasure, Sheridan.
Ross Clifford, who's the principal of Morling College, author of many books, including Leading Lawyers, Look at the Resurrection.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.